All right, Rabosai, good morning. Let's begin. A lot to do today, Baruch Hashem. So today's daf is daf chaf. I want to thank Yehuda for giving the shiur yesterday. And we are picking up on your test on the days 19b, five lines up from the bottom. Turn around on Matzah Shover. So remember, Rabosai, we're going to finish Nemir Hashem the Perek today, hopefully, time permitting. And we're going to finish, close out the sugyas of lost shtaros. So turn around on Motzah Shover. If a person goes ahead and finds a receipt, a lost receipt, then remember again, we're going to use different lashonos. We're going to see in the next Mishnah the lashon of Simfon. Simfon also refers to a receipt. Shover is usually the name that is used for a receipt, dafka, from a ksuva. So a person goes ahead and finds a shover, which indicates the ksuva was paid. Bizman she'isham odiyachzer the baal. If the woman admits that the ksuva was paid, then you could return the shover, you could return to the seat to the husband. Ein ha'isha moda, but if the woman is not moda, ultimately again that the ksuva was paid, then lo yachzer, lo lozeh, lo lozeh. Then ultimately you cannot go ahead and give the shtar back to the woman, nor can you give it back to the man. Bizman she'isha moda, mias yachzer the baal. But again, what's clear from the Brisa we'll say is what? That if the woman admits that the ksuva was paid, you are permitted to go ahead and give the shover, you're permitted to give the receipt back to the husband. So why aren't we concerned with the possibility that maybe the shover was written in Nisan, but it wasn't really delivered until Tishrei? Now, what are we concerned about? Now, in the interim between Nisan and Tishrei, let's say she sold her, I don't know, you know what I'm saying? A woman could sell her ksuva. It's a future, right? In the possibility that she predeceases her husband or she gets divorced, that someone else is entitled to ultimately repayment. So again, even if the shover is dated in Nisan, but wasn't delivered until Tishrei, we have a potential problem. Because if she sold the ksuva somewhere between now and Tishrei, then it could be that what? It could be that again, that Lamaisa, she was entitled to sell it, but according to the shover, according to the receipt, that would not indicate that, and the husband could technically then go back and reclaim that which she sold, thereby defrauding the purchasers, to which the Gemara says, the husband of them produced the shover that is dated in Nisan, and he'll go and he'll reclaim that property that she sold. So how do we deal with this possibility? What do we see from here? Isa l'dishmuel. Rabbi says it's clear that we hold like Shmuel. Rabbi says, what does it mean we hold like Shmuel? Damer Shmuel. Rabbi says this is actually a very dramatic shita. Damer Shmuel, hamocher shtarchov lechaveiro. If somebody goes ahead and sells a note to his friend, the chazar umachlo, and then Rabbi says the original creditor goes ahead and is mochel the debt, machol. Rabbi says this is actually a very dramatic shita. What this shita says is the following. That Aloch Lemaisa, when I go ahead and I lend money to someone, so I am the debt holder. And even if I sell that debt to someone else, I'm selling the rights to collect that debt. But I am always the holder. In other words, there are certain things that cannot be transferred. So if I lend money to Reuven, I could sell the right of collection to someone else. But Lamaisa, at the end of the day, I am always going to be the one who holds that debt. To the point that Shmuel says, and this is very dramatic, if I lend money to Reuven, and then I sell the collection right to Shimon, I, the original lender, could still be mochel the debt, even after I sold the right of collection to another party. So therefore, the Gemara says, if husband and wife over here or really want to defraud the purchasers, there are easier ways they could defraud the purchasers than by playing with the date on the shover. Very simply put, the woman ultimately holds a right to collect. She is the creditor. By definition, even if she sold that right to collect to someone else, at any point in time, she could choose to forgive the debt, thereby defrauding the purchaser. So if you're going to be choshesh for fraud, aim with double self, because at the end of the day, she can always cancel the debt.
You wouldn't have to get a return of the purchase.
So you could sue for damages. You could sue for damages, but remember, to a certain degree, it's a shtickel grama, right? Meaning it's causative. It's causative. You know, you're not directly injuring a party. You're causing them to lose out on an ability to collect the debt, which is indirect damages, which then gets into the whole area of halacha of grama. So it's not, the answer is technically maybe, but it's not going to be pashut.
You knew what he was getting into.
I'm sorry?
Yes,
so according to Shmuel, any time, it would have to be that according to Shmuel, whenever you're purchasing the right to collect the debt, the pashtos, it would always be at a steep discount, since you know that the original creditor always has the right to cancel the debt. Inakinami. So says the Gemara, Vafilu yoresh mochel, and even someone who inherits a debt could be mochel the debt as well. Because we'll say again, that means like, even let's say the father was the creditor, the father dies, debt, the right to collect the debt passes on ultimately again to the son. The son has the ability to cancel the debt as well. Abaye says no. Afilu teima le'sila d'Shmuel. No, it's true. It's not true. Even if the Braisa doesn't even have to subscribe to Shmuel. How so? How come I ask? You know, what's the case? B'sheshtar k'suva yotze mitachas yada. The case of us that they were talking about, where if you find the receipt, you can go ahead and you can give it back. You can give it back to the husband, is in a case where ultimately, again, she has the ksuva in her hand. Rashi says, "B'shtar ksuva yotzei midachas yada, shemevia lefaneinu." She's bringing the ksuva to us. Deleka lemechash l'shema machra betavas hana shilu macharta haisamoseras ksuvia. Okay, so also we're talking about a case where we know she didn't sell the ksuva. How do we know she didn't sell the ksuva? How do we know that? Because she has the document in her hand. Had she sold the right to collect the ksuva, again, I will say, remember again, how if a woman sells the right to collect the ksuva, she's giving that document then to a third party. That ksuva, essentially, again, you know, with all the money we spend on the calligraphy and this and that, at the end of the day, it's a loan document. It's a loan document. So with Pashtos, if she was going to sell that document, she would have to give that document over to the person who now has the right of collection. Since it's in her hand, it's clear that she did not sell it. If she did not sell it, then when we find the shover, we can go ahead and give it back to the husband, because why? We don't have to be choshesh that maybe he wrote it in Nisan, didn't give it to her until Tishrei, and she went out and sold it in the interim. We know she didn't sell it, because she's holding on to the ksuva. To which the Gemara says, "V'Rava Amar Imishum Shtar Ksuva Chashin on L'Shtei Ksuvas." Well, Rava says, "Well, maybe at the end of the day, there were two Shtar Ksuva. Maybe there were two different Ksuva documents." So we'll say, "So why would you have two Ksuva documents?" Look at Rashi, L'Shtei Ksuvos Shema Shnei Shtar Ksuva Hayula V'Yishlochu Shema Masra Echal Lokeach Uba'a Lach Zorba V'Limchol Eitzel Baila U'Moseres L'Shover Hamukten. So we'll say, maybe there are two Ksuva documents now. You'll ask, why would you have two ksuva documents? Well, so I'll just tell you, without getting into all the technicalities. So the simple case could be in a case where what? Right, she thought she lost it. They drafted another ksuva. Turns out that she found it. So she had two ksuva documents. Well, so there are also different circumstances sometimes because of certain inyanim that may occur with a chasen and kala that sometimes we would have two ksuva documents that are written. We don't have to get into the details of this for now, but the point is there is a metzias where you could have two different ksuva documents. So the Gemara says, "Va'abai, Amar Abai says, va'chado l'shtei ksuvos lo chashinon." First of all, we're not choshesh for two ksuvos. Right? We can't be choshesh for those kinds of things. In general, in halacha, we can only be choshesh for normative cases. We're not choshesh that it's going to be two ksuvos. Va'od shover bizman al tarif. Oh. Was an Abayis or something else? At the end of the day, I will say that Abayis of the opinion that the date that is written in a shtar is authoritative. Right? So at the end of the day, when that shor, bless you, when that receipt has a date in it, we assume that is the valid date of the transaction. That's the date in which the ksuva was paid. Abayi the Tamein, Abayi goes according to a general reasoning who says, the Amar, Eidav Bechosamav Zakilam. So we'll say this is a shita we see in an ongoing way throughout the sugya. Eidav Bechosamav Zakilam means, I will say the following. At some point in time, Abayi says like this. If you don't allow the shtar to speak for itself, then ein ledover sof. Meaning, what's powerful about a shtar is what? What is powerful about a shtar? A shtar is supposed to be a written narrative. A shtar tells you a story. Here's what happened. Here are the edim that attested what happened. And here is the date that tells you when it happened. If you start telling me now that that date is not authoritative, and you're going to tell me then what? That even though it's dated Nisan, it's probably possible it wasn't given until Tishrei, then at some point in time you're going to be left with what? I mean, this is a very open-ended question. Right, doubt. Right, good. I gave you there were a lot of possible answers to that question. I just want to tell you. Right, so meaning at some point you're going to be left with that, right, really doubt. I mean, then what you're telling me then you're telling me then that there's an alternative narrative for every single shtar. And Abai says that doesn't make sense. At some point, I'm Eda Bechasam and Zakulah means that when you see witnesses sign on the shtar, assuming you could uphold those signatures, that's Kiyum Shtaras, we are done. That shtar tells a story, and that's the story we're going by. Unless, of course, you're going to bring proof to tell me that the narrative is different other than recorded in the shtar. So therefore, again, halacha l'maisa, the Gemara says, in a case where you find the receipt of ksuva payment, and you find it in the shuk, if the isha is moda, if she admits that her ksuva has been repaid, then einachinami, you could return that receipt to the husband, and gamarna, we don't have to be choshesh for multiple alternative narratives. Now, obviously, if she doesn't admit that it was repaid, then we go back to the previous sugyas. Okay, so then again, in those kind of situations, ultimately, we won't return the shtar to either of the parties, because we just don't know what to do. Fine, says the Mishnah. Bosai, last Mishnah of the first parak. Matzah igros shum. So I go ahead and I find valuation documents. What does it mean valuation documents? Look at Rashi. Igros shum. Sheshamo beis din nichse lo velamava bechovo. So this is a situation where Beis Din has authorized a creditor to collect from the property of the debtor, of the borrower, and the borrower doesn't have, it's a case where the borrower doesn't have money, so they're valuating the properties of the debtor. So that's called an igros shum. So you find a lost igros shum, which again, Abbas says, not just the valuation, but it's an entitlement, it's a right. The document says that creditor has the right to collect the properties of the borrower, or igros mazon. We'll say igros mazon is a case where a man marries a woman and she has a daughter already from a previous marriage. And what happens? The husband, the new husband, husband number two, accepts the responsibility to go ahead and support his wife's daughter from her previous marriage. It's called igros mazon. Shtari chalitza. You find the chalitza document. Or miunin. So remember again, miun, we know a father has the biblical right to marry off his minor daughter. So let's say it turns out that she does not want this marriage, so she could do something called miun. I'm sorry, well, mius. Let me add in one more piece. Father has the right to biblically marry off his daughter. A mother or a brother have the ability to enter her into rabbinic marriage. The difference between the rabbinic marriage and the biblical marriage is the rabbinic marriage could be dissolved simply through miyun, which translates as her refusal. So she could simply say, I do not want this, and that is enough to dissolve the rabbinic marriage. Now, even though, again, all it needs is a verbal expression of intent, we record this intent in a shtar. That's called shtari miyun. So ushtari birurin, or I will say shtar birurin, the Gemara is going to discuss what exactly this is. V'chol ma'ase beizdin. And for that matter, any document, Rabosai, that had to be drafted within Beis Din, Harei Zeyachser, Mosai. Now, what the Mishnah is pointing out over here is there are different types of shtaros. Not every shtar needs to be drafted in Beis Din. These types of shtaros need to be drafted in Beis Din itself. Anytime a shtar was done under the purview of Beis Din, you return it to the intended party. Look at Rashi. Harei Zeyachser, Teleka Lamechash L'Shema Nimlach. Because it will say, in general, what are we concerned about when we find a lost shtar? What are we generally concerned about? We're concerned about that someone may have drafted the shtar and then what? Changed their mind. Right? I didn't carry it. So the shtar says that I'm going to lend $10,000 to Reuven. That's fine. But who says I did it? Who says I did it? It says that I'm ready to. Who says that I did it? That's the concern. That concern doesn't exist with shtaros that are done in Beis Din. Because shtaros that are done in Beis Din Rabosai are done as part of an overall transaction. That's why, again, any shtar that was done under the purview of Beis Din, you are permitted to return, because we know for a fact that the transaction occurred. Harei yachzir, teleka l'meichash l'shama nimach. There's no concern that maybe the parties changed their mind. Beis Din lo kasvum ela bedavar mekuyam. Beis Din only goes ahead and writes a shtar for a transaction that has been upheld. So therefore again, we're not choshesh that the transaction did not occur, and therefore the documents can be returned. So the Gemara goes weiter. If you go ahead and you find a shtar, chafisa or deluskama, again, we'll define these specifically in the Gemara, but they're receptacles. You find the shtar in a receptacle, or tachrish shel shtaros, or aguda shel shtaros, or you find a pile of shtaros, I should say a roll of shtaros, or a pile of shtaros, hare ze yachzir. These should be returned. So the chilik over here is, these are not lost. Rather what? These represent an intentional placement, right? This is going to get into our next parak of Eila Metzias, right? These represent an intentional placement or an intentional tying. So these should be returned to their owners. The kama aguda shel shtaros, what is considered to be a pile of shtaros, shlosha kshurin zebaze, three shtaros tied together. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, Echot halova mishlosha yachz yolover. Well, it's interesting. Rabbi Shimon says the following case: let's say you find three shtaros that name the same borrower, but three different lenders. So shtar one says Reuven borrowed from Shimon. Shtar two says Reuven borrowed from Levi, and shtar three says that Reuven borrowed from Yehuda. So three same lender, and you find them all together. Kshurim zeba, bless you. So they're together. Yachz yolover. So we'll say that's a pretty good indication that what? That the borrower lost these shtaros, therefore you give them back to the borrower. Shlosha halavim mina echad. Rabbi said, let's say again you have three shtaros, and in this shtaros again, the malva is the same. So Reuven lent to Shimon one shtar, Reuven lent to Yehuda second shtar, Reuven lent to Yisachar third shtar, and they're all found together. Yachzu la malva. Both of that's a pretty good indication that what? That it's the same lender who lost all three of these shtaros. So the Gemara says, listen to this. I find a document, I'm cleaning out my papers, and I find a loan document. I don't know, was it repaid? Was it not repaid? I don't know what happened with the shtar. So we'll say, what's the halacha? Yehemunach ad sheyavo Elio. They have to leave that shtar until Elio Hanavi comes. And ultimately, again, he will instruct me what to do with it. Rashi says over here, "Matze shtar bein shtaros ve'in yodu amativo etzlo im halo ve'hefkido etzlo o hamalva o shema mitzasa pura masrua lo liyo shlish b'nei mshan." Now, this is not talking about a loan document where I am the creditor or the borrower. This is talking about a situation where I'm holding a shtar for someone else. And I just don't remember what was I supposed to do with this. Right? Was I supposed to collect it? Not collect it. Was it collected, repaid? I don't know what to do with it. So again, I'll say this is a classic case of finding a shtar, and I don't know what happened with the shtar. Yemunach ad sheyavo Elio. Im yeshimon symphonos, yasema shebesymphonos. However, again, if there were receipts along with the shtar, then the receipts ultimately, again, tell me the story of what happened with the shtar. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Emesh simfon, mili mili katoni, hamotzi ben shtarosov, shover shenichtav al echad mishtarosov. So we'll say, if I find a receipt written, attached to one of my shtaros, ya'asem ha'beshim shebesimfon, v'ashtar becheskas parua, v'afa pi shahayel shover hazel, lihiyos munach biyad halove. So we'll say, now this is a little bit of a different case. I find a loan document. I lent Reuven $1,000. It happens to be also that I find the symphone, I find the receipt for payment of that document together with that loan document. Now, it's strange for me as the lender to have possession of that receipt. Because who normally has possession of the receipt? The borrower, right? Because the borrower would repay the money, he would get the receipt. It's strange that I, the lender, have the symphone. Nevertheless, the Mishnah Paskins, that symphone, that receipt tells the story as well, and tells the story that what? That the loan has in fact been repaid, and I do not collect the loan again. Says the Gemara, my shtari berurin. So remember the Mishnah spoke about shtari berurin. What are shtari berurin? So hacha Targimo shtari ta'anasa. So here I will say we refer to it as what? Shtari ta'anasa. So what is shtari ta'anasa? So Rashi says, so again, Shtaritan also means these are the court documents. The court documents, in other words, that will say these are the court transcripts that go ahead and outline what happens, the claims of the various parties. Rabbi Yirmiyahu Amar, ze borer lo echad, ze borer lo echad. No, so again, so Rabbi Yirmiyahu says, Shtabirun Abu Sayyid refers to the following, that we normally call this a zabla. So a zabla, so normally if two parties have a, go to a beis din, what if there's not a beis din kavua, set beis din, so what happens? So litigant one, so right, defendant claims or chooses his dayon, and plaintiff chooses his dayon, and the two dayonim together go ahead and choose a third dayon collectively. That's called shtarei birurin. Okay. V'chol ma'aseh beizin harezi yachzer, and any document done in beizin has to be returned. So we'll say, actually, we had this case before. Ha'ugita dishtachach beidina d'rafuna. There was a get, a literal get, to get the woman that was found in the beizin arvafuna. But sir, we had this on Friday. We had this on Friday. This was the case of where we had the machlokes about Shayaros and Tzuyos, Shnei Yosef ben Shimon. So there was a get that was found in the basin of Rav Huna. Tavik Sivbei v'shviri masad arachis nara. And the get was written. The location of the get was in the city of Shviri that sat on the banks of the Rachis River. Amar Rav Huna, remember this is Rav Huna's basin. Rav Huna said, Chayshinon l'shnei Shviri. We're choshish that there are two different cities with the same name of Shviri. Amar Rav Chista l'rabba. So Rav Chista said to Rabba, "Puk ayin de la orta ba'i la Rav Huna minach." So Rav Chista said to Rabba, "Listen, go and investigate. Meaning, look into the halacha concerning this sugya, because tonight Rav Huna is going to ask you about it." So nafak dak va'ashkach. So Rabba went out and he found the following mishnah: "This nan kol ma'ase beis din harezi yachzir." That whenever the beis din does a document, you could return that document ultimately to. To the parties, or to the party, Omri Rav Amram l'Rabba. So let's listen to this. So therefore, Rabba came back, and Rabba wanted to say to Rav Huna that l'maisa, again, a get, is considered to be a maisa bezin, and therefore, again, you should return it ultimately to the woman. So says the Gemara, Omri Rav Amram l'Rabba. So Rabba said to Rabba, Heichi pashit mar isura mi mamona. So I don't understand, how can you compare the cases? The case of kol maisa bezin harezi yachzir is talking about what? Mamon. Talking about money. Get is Isser. I will say, generally, the principle we go by is what? That we do not learn out Isser from Mammon. Right? That the laws of Isser and the laws of Mammon are two separate bodies of Halacha. So how can you go ahead and extrapolate from Mammon and learn it out to Isser? So we'll say, so this exchange gets a little bit heated. So this is Rabbi Amram, so this is Rabbi. Rabbi says back to Rabbi Amram, Amar Lei, Tarda. So we'll say, Tarda means Mishumam. You're crazy. Right? You're crazy. You're a nut. Right? You're crazy. How can you say such a thing? Shtari chalitza umeunin tnan. So we'll say, right, after all, the Mishnah itself says that what? The Mishnah says shtari chalitza and shtari miun, which I will say are cases of what? Are cases of iser. So you see that even when the Mishnah says, kol mais beis din yachzir, that refers to any type of document done in beis din, whether it's what? Whether it's mamon or whether it's iser. So the Gemara says, listen to what happened. So Tnan, I'm sorry, Paka Arza de Beirav. But listen to this. The support beam in the Beis Medrash split. As a result of this heated exchange, the support beam in the Beis Medrash split. But listen to this, Maisa. So Mar Amar Mishum Lesoi Didi Paka. Mar Amar Mishum Lesoi Didi Paka. So what's it, Rav Amram and Rabba argued as to why the beam split. Look at Rashi. Mar Amar Mishum L'Soy Didi Bishvil Mazoli Shekina Al Shegideftani Umar Amar Mishum L'Soy Didi Shehishbasa Al Dabar Levay Shainu Beis HaMedrash. So both say, Rav Amram said that ultimately again this beam split because Rabba called me crazy because I was embarrassed. Rabba said the beam split because Rav Amram humiliated me and challenged my ruling in the Beis Din. So Rabbi says, so what's happening over here? So the Maharsha says, they're not trying to claim that it's out my kavod that the beam split. What they're both doing ultimately is taking responsibility for their reactions to the situation. Rav Amram is saying, I challenged Rabba too quickly, right? And perhaps I did not challenge him in a bakavadic fashion. Rabba says, I took offense too easily and I shouldn't have gotten offended. So they're both saying that ultimately, again, the beam cracked in the base medrash because I acted inappropriately. See, each one is claiming I acted inappropriately, and that's why the beam said to Rabba. Say, by the way, is an incredible musr on both accounts. Number one, we learn from this sugya how to go. You know, sometimes people do something wrong and they have to be confronted. There's a way to confront people when they do something wrong. It has to be done with love and it has to be done with acceptance, and it can't be chas v'shalom done with anger. The difference in these confrontations is that there was kaas, there was a level of anger. Number two, Rabbi say, person has to be mavir al midosav. You know, people wrong us all the time. Maisim v'chol yom. That people wrong us in big ways and in small ways. Rabosai, a person has to be ma'avir amidosav. Don't take offense. Don't take offense. Let things roll. You know, there are some people that walk around offended all of the time. They're always offended. Right? They're offended because I didn't get this covered, or because I got too much covered, or because I didn't get that covered. And they're offended because, did you hear how this one spoke to me? I say, you know what? People are abrasive, and people are difficult, and people are not nice, and people don't talk nicely, and people make unkind gestures. Grow up. It's okay. Get a thicker skin. You know, don't get offended all the time, because if you have a thin skin and you're always going to be offended, you know, we'll say there are some people, and it's the worst thing, there are some people that walk around, they're constant victims. This Rebbe wasn't nice, and this Mora wasn't nice, and this one didn't talk, and this is why, and they're always victimized. So what happens? We'll say, what happens if people are always victimized? You know, if you have a victim mentality, then what happens is you never accomplish anything in life. For a very simple reason. Because when you're a victim for a long enough time, everything is someone else's fault. So if everything is someone else's fault, I have no achrayas to advance my life forward. So don't be a victim. Don't be a victim. Own your life. Own your eye. This one's not nice. Shkoyach. People aren't nice. I always say, you know what? Don't expect any better treatment than Moshe Rabbeinu got. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu was accused of being a thief when they collected money for the Mishkan. He was accused of being an adulterer when he didn't live with his wife. So if Moshe Rabbeinu was going to get some heat from the Jews, so don't think you're any better than Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? So if Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't get treated nicely, and by the way, it's not just Moshe Rabbeinu, right? It's every single leader, it's every single time. We say, you know, tzaddikim are often only considered tzaddikim. They only get real covered when they die. Right? So you have to understand, everybody respects dead people. This is like a big thing. That's why you go to a levaya. What happens at a levaya? They carry the aron out. What happens when they carry the aron out? Oh, everybody stands up. They treated the guy like a piece of jerk when he was alive, but now that he's in a box, mamish, he's, you know. Then suddenly everybody gives him covered. Why? Because a dead person is Judaica. So people have a lot of reverence. No, I'll say it's MS. I'm not making it. Because people respect Judaica. They respect Judaica. Like, I respect the menorah. And I respect the crown of a Sefer Torah. And I respect the mantle. People, I will trample all over them from here until tomorrow. But Judaica, mama, Judaica. It's like, so a person is in a box. They're Judaica. When they're Judaica, everybody stands up. Trust me, you go to any levaya and go around the room, right? And do a little bit of a poll about how those people, they're treated this person during their lifetime. Inevitably, the person was mistreated. I was like, but Zohi Derech HaChaim, you know, the best thing and the most liberating thing in life is when you accept certain realities for what they are. Don't expect kavod, because you don't need kavod to be successful in life. Don't expect people to be nice to you, because you don't need people to be nice to you in life. Don't expect other people to always give you a smile or this, or to do what you want them to do when you want them to do that, because they've got their own issues going on. You live life, take control over your life. Don't get offended. Don't get upset. Let it just roll off you. and you see you live, you're empowered. Suddenly again, my ability to succeed is no longer in the hands of other people. It doesn't depend. You could treat me like Drek. I mean, please don't. But you could do that, and it's okay. I'm still going to succeed because I know what I have to do, and how you interact with me, or what you say, how you say, I'll see you, you should be nice. But it doesn't matter for me. I have to do what I have to do. That's what's happening over here in this Gemara. That's the Musar of this. So here, Rav Amram and Rabbi having this. So what happens? Say back to the Gemara.
Yeah.
That's so much better. thank you for bringing back over here. So that's, by the way, you have to understand, when the Gemara recorded these exchanges, Nabo said, by the way, that's why these exchanges are here, right? Why is this here? Because this is the Musar at the end of the day. Rav Amram and Rabbah, after everybody cools down for a second, they both realize they acted inappropriately, right? Rav Amram went on the attack, and there's a way to dialogue. There's a dialogue, I should say differently, we spoke about this over Yom Kippur. There's a dialogue of disagreement. There's a way to talk. And Rav Amram realized, I didn't talk appropriately. I didn't challenge appropriately. And what happens? And Rabbah says, I got offended too easily. I got offended, yet my feelings were hurt because I'm Rabbah, and I know what I'm talking about. And when Amram challenged me, my feelings got hurt. But you know what? There's a way also to let things slide off you without having to get upset about every single thing. So at the end of the day, they're both claiming responsibility for acting inappropriately in this particular episode. Says the Gemara, Matzah bechafisa over the luskima. So we'll see what happens. So is it hot in here? Testicle stuffing. Yehuda, maybe if you open that door a little bit. I'm sure. Unless you're cold. Is it? Yeah, okay. So says the Gemara. So turn Rabbanan. So matzah betefisa over the luskema. So what happens? Say if you find the shtar nechafisa or the luskema. If you get cold, you could close it. Yehuda, if you get cold, close it. So matzah bechafisa over the luskama. So what happens if you go ahead and you find the shtar in a receptacle? So my chafisa, Amar Rav Arachana, chamas ketano. So chamas ketano means a small flask. Now actually Rashi points out over here that chamas ketano actually means shel orshno sabayat, a small wineskin. A wineskin, right? Should bring this back. Menachem, this is a good project. Wineskins. You know, maybe with the Shul logo on it. You know, so if you find the shtar, you find the shtar in the wineskin. So again, I will say, these are all examples. This will come up more in next parak. These are all simonim of intentional placement. My deluskema, what's a deluskema? Amra bar Shmuel, talika desabi. So deluskema is an old man's basket. So apparently old people used to have a basket where they would keep like the items they needed on a regular basis. You know, like the cart, like the metal cart, right? So they used to have a basket where they would put the stuff that they needed on a more regular basis. So if you find the shtaros in these places, that's indicative of intentional placement, and therefore you return it. Tachrich shel shtaros or agudah shel shtaros. Similarly, if you find a roll of shtaros or a pile of shtaros, tan rabbanon kamehi tachrich shel shtaros. So we'll say, how many shtaros is considered to be a roll? So shlosha kruchen zebozeh. Three shtaros rolled into each other. The kamehi agudah shel shtaros. So we'll say, what's a pile of shtaros? Shloshek shurin zebozeh. Three shtaros tied to each other. Shamas minal kesher simen. Rabbosai, so first of all, what you see from here, and again, this is all like a great lead into the next parak. So you see from here that a kesher, the way that shtaros are tied, the type of knot you use, is also going to be indicative of a simen. Sartani Rabbi Chia, Shloshek ruchan zebozeh. So we just said that an aguda is three shtaros tied to each other. Ihachi hainu tachrich. So I don't understand. If an aguda is three shtaros tied to each other, and a tachrich is three shtaros tied to each other, so isn't the tachrich the same thing as an aguda? To which Gemara says, no. Tachrich, kol chad v'chad berosha dechavrei. Aguda, dirama ahadadi ukruchos. Oh, Bosa, here's the difference. A tachrich, Bosa, if you can imagine this for a moment, is where you roll one shtar, then you roll another shtar on top of it, and then another shtar on top of that. That's called the tachrich. And aguda is where you take three shtaros, and what? You roll them all together. Okay. So we'll see, by the way, in the next parak, why these distinctions make a difference. Ukruchos, the Gemara says finally, tachrich, kochad, chabarashah, dechabrei, aguda, tirami, ahadod, vikorachos. My machris, so we'll say, when you find a bundle like this, So what do you announce? In other words, both sides. Now again, we're getting into Elim Etzias now, but what do you announce when you find something like this? So you announce minyan. You announce the number of shtaros you found. So my iria tlaso. So if that's the case, then ultimately, again, why is it three shtaros? Afilu trin nami. Two would also be something you should announce. In other words, why does the Gemara Dafka say that aguda is three or tachrich is three? Rather, again, Ravina said, no, you don't announce the number. The same way if you find coins, what do you say? I found the coin, or I found coins. That's all you say. So too, when you find shtaros, all you do is you announce, I found shtaros. Fine. Rav Shimon Gamliel Lomar, Echad Alava Mishlosha Yachzir Lelova. So what's the memory again? Rav Shimon Gamliel says, if you find three documents, and what? All of them name the same borrower, that indicates to us what? That it was the Lova who lost the Shtar, and therefore you return it to the Lova. Because yeah. If you think that the Shtar belongs to the Malva, to the lender, my bo gabi hadadi, why are they together? In other words, why, you know, say, again, if you think they belong to the Malva, then again, remember, this is a case of where it's the same Lova, three different Malvas. So why would the stars of three different malves be together? To which the Gemara says that the malvinin who malbar gabi adadi. Well, dima lekayimin who azli. So maybe again the three malves, the three lenders went to and kaim their stars together. Dima kaimi. We're talking about a case where the stars were already upheld. Dima meida miyada the safra nafil. Or maybe it was the sofer who was holding the shtar, and he dropped it, or the shtaros, and he dropped it. Lo mashi inish kiyumi biyada de safra. But it's just not the way it works. People don't leave, so shtaros that are mekuyam in the hands of a sofer. In other words, meaning, once the shtar has been mekuyam, or has been certified, thank you, has been certified, then the maisa, again, the malva doesn't leave that in the hand of the sofer, he takes that himself. Therefore, again, Abbas, Eloch lemaisa, if you find three shtaros that all name the same lova, the same borrower, that's indicative that it's one lova, the person who lost all three, and we return those shtaros to the lova. Shlosha shlavu me'echad yavin lemalva. Similar, Abbas, the reverse case. I find now three shtaros that name the same malva. Name the same lender. That's indicative that the same lender lost all three. These are that chadulav and ninhu. Because if you want to say that it belongs to it's the property of the lover, the borrower. My bo gabi hadodi. Why are three different shtaros rolled together? Why are they all together? Dilma lemichtevinhu azli. Maybe ultimately, again, the three loves went together to go and have their shtaros written. Dechsivi betlas yadi safri. Well, it's written in three different handwritings indicating three different sofrim. So it can't be that the three loves went together. Vedilma lekai minhu azli. Maybe they went to go ahead and be mekayim to certify the shtaros together. So the Gemara says, malve mekayim shtare, love lo mekayim shtare. No, that can't be. Why? Because Rabbi said, in the process of kiyum shtaros, it is a malve who normally has the vested interest to have the shtar certified, not the lov, which makes sense. Because the certification of the shtar is what enables, ultimately, the malva to collect his debt. So kiyum shtaros would not normally be a process that the lova himself would be going through, it would be the malva. Weiter. Im yesh iman simfonos, yasem ashebe simfonos. Rabbi said, this was the last case in the Mishnah. Where what? I'm going through my papers, and I find the shtar. And what happens? I find together with that shtar a receipt. So even though normally the receipt should be in the hands of the lova, but nevertheless we allowed the receipt to go ahead and dictate the realities concerning the shtar. In other words, that the existence of that receipt indicates to me that the shtar has already been fully paid off, says the Gemara. So what's Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba is going to contradict the statement of the Mishnah. What does Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba say? Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba Amarav, Simfon hayotze mitachas yidei malva. If at the end of the day you have a simfon, if you have a receipt that comes from the hands of the malva, comes from the hands of the lender, afa pi sheksav b'ksav yado, eino ela kimesachek upasol. We'll say, watch this. Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba says that if there is a receipt in the hands of the malva, in the hands of the lender, Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba paskins, you need not pay attention to that receipt. Rather, again, because Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba says, if it was a real bona fide receipt, then who should have it? the lover, the borrower, and the fact that the borrower does not have it tells us that we need not pay attention to this receipt, and the debt itself is still fully enforceable. This is even so if what? Even if the receipt is in the handwriting of the Malva himself. So the Gemara says, Lomi Baiksov, Biksav Yad Sofer Dikla Meim. So it goes without saying, if the handwriting is in the handwriting of a Sofer, the Ikala Meimar Safra Isramile, as well as it's possible that what happened, it's possible that the Malva, you could have a circumstance where the Malva would go ahead, he'd come across a Sofer, he'd say, you know what, I don't know when I'm going to see you next, do me a favor, write a Shover. Write a receipt, right? Because I expect one day that the Lova is going to pay back this debt. I'd like to have a receipt ready. So do me a favor, draft it for me now. But he's pre-drafting a receipt. So therefore, again, the existence of that receipt in the handwriting of the sofer in no way indicates that the Lova actually paid back the debt. Ela afilu ksav biksav yado pasul. But here's a bigger chiddush I will say. Even if there is a receipt in existence that is in the handwriting of the lender himself, that still does not indicate to us that the debt has been repaid. If the debt hasn't been repaid, then what's the bekasha? Then why does that receipt exist? If it's in the handwriting of the sofer, I hear it. Because maybe he doesn't know how to draft the receipt. He found the sofer. He stumbled on the sofer. All right, write it for me. I don't know if I'm going to see you next. But I would have thought that if the sofer is in the handwriting of the baal, which indicates to us what? That he's capable of doing it, then I would have said that the existence of that receipt should indicate to us that what? That the debt has already been repaid. Yet Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba says, no. Even if it's in his handwriting, it still doesn't indicate that it's been repaid. So if that's the case, the $1 million question is, why did he write it? Oh, I'll tell you why. Dilma Misrami V'asi, Ari's on a roll today, but he's on fire. Because what could happen? What if I'm the Malva? What am I concerned about? The Lova is going to come. The Bar is going to come. 5 minutes before Shabbos, Vika Parilin is going to want to pay me back. But if you're the lender, if you're the borrower, then rightfully so, you're not paying back until what? Until you get a receipt. So what's going to happen? He's going to shut my house 10 minutes before Shabbos and say, here, I want to pay you back. This is wonderful, but I'm not giving you back the money until you give me a shover. So let I, the lender, I'll go ahead and write the shover now. So this way again, when he shows up at my house, I'll what? When he shows up at my house, I'll give it to him. So again, Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba is of the opinion that we'll say, now this is a dramatic shita, because this contradicts the Mishnah. Remember again, in the Mishnah, the whose shita was it? Oh, is it just the Mishnah? It's not a comment. So the Mishnah says that if you find receipts, so receipts are the final word. If you find receipts tell us that the debt has been repaid. Kablon Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba says, no. Not true. The existence of receipts by themselves don't mean anything. The only time that a receipt is meaningful is when it's in the hands of the borrower. That's when a receipt is meaningful. That shows the debt has been repaid. But if the lender has the receipt, that doesn't tell us anything. Because manafshach, if the receipt is in the handwriting of the sofer, maybe just the lender came upon a sofer, didn't know when he's going to see a sofer next. Says sofer, do me a favor, draft me the receipt so I have it ready. And even if it's in his own handwriting, all that means is what? I want to be prepared. Because if the borrower comes to me a few minutes before Shabbos ready to repay his debt, understandably so, he's not going to want to give me the money unless I give him the receipt. I want to have the receipt ready. Therefore, says Rabbi Yirmiyahu, if the lender has in his possession the receipt that in no way indicates that the debt has been paid off, the only time a receipt means anything is when it's in the hands of the borrower. Incredible, incredible shita. So it says, let's just do a few more lines. Tanan. So here's the problem. So that's Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba's shita, which is a pretty, if you think about it, by the way, a pretty compelling shita. So says the Gemara. Just want to underline that. It's really very compelling. Lack of signatures on the shover. Oh, hold on. Good. Baruch Shachivanta. So says the Gemara. One second, Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba. That sounds all fine, except what does the Mishnah say? Tanan, imel shimaim simponos ya'asemashe b'simponos. But yet, what does the Mishnah say? Rabbi Osai, the Mishnah explicitly contradicts Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba. And the Mishnah says that if you find a document, and together with that document are what? Are symphonos, are receipts. Receipts tell us that what? That the document, that the debt has been repaid. Kidam Rav Safra. No, because what's he have to qualify the Mishnah? What's the case of the Mishnah? As Rav Safra explained, Kidam Rav Safra, Shenimsa Bein Shtaros Keruin. Oh, you found, essentially you found the Simfon of Osai, you found the Simfon together with a pile of torn Shtaros. Because of Osai, what happens after a document has been repaid, after the debt has been repaid? Shtar is torn up. Oh, okay, now this makes much more sense. See, if you go ahead and you find the symphon together in a pile of torn shtaros, then I put two and two together and I see the shtar is torn, which indicates that it's been repaid, plus there's a symphon, there's a receipt. Okay, now I go ahead, I use my, you know, forensic shtar background, and I understand now that lemaisa again, that the shtar has been repaid. To which the Gemara says, "Hachanami shematu bein shtaros kiruin." When does the Mishnah say that if you find the symphon, you could assume that that means that the shtar has been repaid? That's dafka when it's found with a pile of torn shtaros. Tashma. So we're going to bring another brayso. Nimtza la'echad bein shtarosav. So listen to this. If I find nimtza la'echad bein shtarosav shtaro shel Yosef ben Shimon parua. So we'll say if I find amongst my shtaros, that I have a shtar, and it says the shtar of Yosef ben Shimon is parua, is repaid. I will say, now what's the case here? Look at Rashi. Nimtza ben shtarosav, masnisin he beget pashet. I will say, this is a Gemara, this is a Mishnah in Baba Basra. Shnei Yosef ben Shimon bi'ir achos. There are two guys by the name of Yosef ben Shimon who live in the same city. Benimtza shover li adam echad ben shtarosav. The kasuv bo shtaros shel Yosef ben Shimon shebiyadi parua v'hayelo shnei shtaros al shneim. But say, listen to this. I lent money to both guys. There are two guys named Yosef ben Shimon, and what? I lent money to both of them. And I have a document that says that I lent money to both of them. And what happens? I have one shover. I have one receipt that says that the debt, right, owed from Yosef ben Shimon to me has been repaid. Only one problem? Which one? So we'll say, so what's the halacha? So the halacha is shtaros shnehem piruin. The halacha rabosai is what? That we consider that both of their debts are paid. So we'll say, this indicates to us what? That the existence of the shover by itself is as if the shtaros are paid. This contradicts Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba, to which the Gemara says, no, kita amar av safra, shenimsa bein shtaros kiruin. Hachanami shenimsa bein shtaros kiruin. No, Rabosai, same case. What's the same case? The same case is Rabosai. Both loan documents are torn, right? But there's only one shover. So, okay, I promise I only have one shover, but because both documents are torn, that's also enough evidence to tell me that what? That both debts have been repaid. Tashma, another case. Rabosai, three lines from the bottom. We're almost there. Three lines from the bottom. Shvua shlo pakadnu abba v'shlo amar lanu abba. So we'll say, listen to this. We take an oath that we did not, look at Rashi. Shvua shel pakanu abba, mishnah hi b'shvuas, yisomin mi'enei asom shelo yifru ela b'shvua. Umash shvuasan, shvua shel pakanu abba b'tzavas misa, v'shlo amar lanu kodim lachin, v'shlo matzinu shover bein shtarosov shel abba, ashtar zeh shu parua. Hi, must have something. We'll say the yisomim make a shvuah before you collect anything from orphans. You have to take a shvuah. The shvuah they make is we did not find, for our purpose, I'm just going to condense the case. We did not find amongst our father's documents any kind of receipt indicating that the debt is repaid. Which we infer from that what? Had they found the receipt in their father's possession, then what? The document would have been considered to be repaid. Which Rabosai contradicts Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba, who says that the presence of a shofar by itself does not indicate that a document has been repaid. To which the Gemara says, same qualification. Amar Rav Safra, shenimtza bein shtaros kiruin. We're talking about a case over here where what? Where lemaisa, again, you found this again in a pile of torn shtar. So Rabosai, remember, any time that the shtar is torn, that is circumstantial evidence that already that what? That the debt itself has been repaid. Tashma. If you have a receipt, and say this goes to your point, if you have a receipt that has witnesses on it, so let the receipt be upheld through the signatures that are on the simple. Now look at Rashi. He's kind bechol samav. Kasaka daitchem amar malva lo nifrati. This would be a case where, again, the malva says, I was never repaid. Yet there is a receipt. What's the case? We're assuming the case was like this. The malva goes ahead, and he's the one who has the shover. But the shover has witnesses on it. So if the witnesses come along and they say the debt was repaid, then the debt was repaid. But if the witnesses don't support the claim, right, if the witnesses either don't know or they're not around, then the ma'isa, the presence of the shover, does not automatically indicate that the debt has been repaid. Which Rabosa, again, seems to go with Rabbi Yirmiyah against the Mishnah, to which the Gemara says, Eima yiskayim mechosamav. No, 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 rather read the Brisa a bit differently. Say, the shover is upheld through its signatures. Paid was the debt not paid. Look at Rashi. E parua deshailinale. E ra'ua piron ve'imlav. The witnesses, did you see the repayment or not? Ve'imlav, excuse me. Ne'eman, ra'umara piron ve'imlav. Ne'eman hamal ve lo mashlo nichtav el lios muchan l'kshiyapara. So what's it? We simply ask the Edimu sign. Did you see the piron or not? If the witnesses say we saw the repayment, then ultimately the debt is repaid. If they say we did not witness the repayment, then at the end of the day, we believe the malva, we believe the lender to say that no repayment took place. Tashma, we're almost there. Simpon sheyeshalav edim kosher. If you find a receipt that has witnesses on it, it's kosher. So my edim, what kind of edim are we talking about? Edim kiyum. We're talking about Gidrashi edim kiyum. Shekasfu henpik. The beidina lo makaymi ella imkein para. So we'll say it has to be edim that could uphold the authenticity of the shover. So the Gemara is talking about mistadra midiktani seifa v'she'ein alav edim pasul, because the seifa says that if there are no edim on it, it's pasul. My ein alav edim. What does it mean? It doesn't have edim. Ilema deleka iluye edim klal. If you say that there's no edus on it at all, so tzricha lemeimar de pasul. Is there any need to say that ultimately it's pasul? Elalav edekium. Rather, again, it must be that what there are no witnesses who could go ahead and actually uphold the validity of the document. So Gufa, the Gemara goes back and talks about the rights previously. Simfon sheishlav edim iskayim bechol samav. See, if you have a simfon, if you have a receipt that has witnesses on it, let the authenticity of the document be upheld by the signatures on the document. So the Gemara says, ein alav edim v'yotzei mitachas miyidei shlish. If there are no witnesses on it, but the simfon is in the hands of a third party, or it comes out after, again, Rashi says, O Shiyotzi la'achar chitim shtaros, Sheyotza lefalini kishu kasav bishtarchov, achra chasimo. For that matter, Rabbi say, again, it appears on the shtar itself after the signatures of the witnesses, kosher. Ultimately, again, it is a proper simfon. Yotzi mitachas yidei shlish. So if it comes from the hands of a third party, it's kashuai daha hemane malve lishlish. Because it will say, ultimately, again, the lender agreed or placed his trust in the third party. Yotzi la'achar chitim shtaros. If it is on the document, after what? After the signing of the document, it's also kosher. Why? Di lav de paria lohava mari le vishtare. Because it will say, oh, di lav de paria, because had the document not been paid, the malva would have never have allowed this to be written on the shtar, because obviously it removes his ability to collect. So I will say, just so you should know, in this sugya, we paskin, Raman pas, Shulnor paskins, like Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba. That the presence, ultimately, again, of a simfon by itself, just the mere existence of the simfon, of the receipt, does not in any way indicate to us that the shtar has been repaid. Again, from Marashach, if the simfon is in the hand, if it's written in the handwriting of a sofer, it's possible that the malva just happened upon the sofer and just said, you know, do me a favor, write this for me now, in the event that when I need it, I'll have it. If it's in his own handwriting, like we said before, it's possible that he had it drafted. Why? Because he wanted to have it ready. If the guy would show up at his house 5 minutes before Shabbos, it wouldn't pay him back without getting the simfon in return. The only way that the simfon ultimately is considered to be valid is through edus on the simfon itself. We'll say, obviously, all of these cases where people disagree as to the metzias. But lamaisa, again, if there's edus on the simfon, and if the edim uphold the validity of the shover of the receipt, then the shover itself is indicative of repayment. But the mere existence of a shover, the mere existence of a receipt, is in no way proof that the debt was repaid. But say, Hadjunalach Shnaim Oxen, Mazel Tov. We just finished our first parak in Bava Metzia together. Let me share with you a short vart, just on Sukkah, just on the Yom Tov of Sukkis. I'm sorry.